Hey, boss babes. Are you tired of feeling burned out? Want to leave your 9-to-5? Feel like clients are just not seeing your worth and want to make a consistent income doing what you love? Well, I am here to help. I'm your host, Brianna Michelle, broke wedding pro turned multiple six-figure earner in 1 year, and I am here to help you transform your business too, proving your dreams can be your reality and live the life you've always imagined. Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Brianna Michelle podcast. I'm so excited you are here. Thank you so much for joining us on another amazing and fabulous episode. I get the opportunity to interview the most amazing photographer. I think she is the most amazing wedding photographer. I've always been a fan of yours, by the way.
So to have?
Oh, yes!
I don't think that I knew that.
No, oh my gosh, we have so much to dive into today. I want to introduce to you the fabulous Jodi Ann with Jodi Ann Photography. She is an international wedding photographer with a master's degree in psychology. She basically has the best photography job ever. She travels around the world taking pictures of people's weddings and is now transitioned into AKA a course creator with her signature course called the J. Ann Effect. Welcome, Jodi, to the podcast. I'm so excited you're here.
I'm going to carry you around to introduce me to like everyone because that's awesome.
Yes, we're all about celebrating and celebrating. You can never celebrate enough. And so I'm just so excited that you said yes to me to come on this podcast and share with us your incredibly exciting career and your journey to get here. I know there's a lot of other wedding photographers that are listening to this right now, as well as other wedding pros that are going to be so inspired after they hear your story. So welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Of course I would say yes. And of course, I'm just like, I think the fangirl goes both ways. And I'm like, oh my God, so cool. She's going to have me on her podcast. So no, thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. So for those of you, I'll give you a little bit of backstory about Jodi and I. So Jodi and I both reside in Las Vegas. We both have wedding businesses that are, I would say, home based in Las Vegas, but Jodi, of course, travels all over the world doing weddings.
I don't think I'm ever home based anywhere.
I know. I know. If you guys follow her on stories, she's all over the place. I think last week you were in Arizona.
Well, fiance lives in Arizona, yes. So I'm gonna pop over to Arizona as many times as like humanly possible. But actually, I think last week I was in Laguna last week.
Nice.
I had three shoots over there over the weekend, which that's a lot. I was exhausted after three shoots in 2 days. So,
oh my gosh. So we're going to dive in. So for those of you that are listening in the car, if you're not listening in the car and you're at home, grab a cocktail, grab some champagne, and because you don't want to miss her story. So Jodi, let's start. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you got into photography.
Okay. You're like pumping me up to have this like amazing story. And I actually think that this part's really boring. okay. So I don't know. I always loved photography growing up. Always, always. I was the girl who took my little, like, they weren't disposable. You know, those little like pink cameras, they were like long and skinny like this. And you like loaded.
Yes. I had one of those. Yeah, so, yes.
I was that girl for sure who like took that on every family vacation that I could and probably took the most horrible photos, but I always loved it. And I always sort of dabbled into this idea. Anytime that I had like my nieces or nephews over, I would like take them out and do these little photo shoots literally with my like point and shoot camera. And then I would make them into gifts for like my sister-in-law or my brother or like whoever's kids they were. And so I always had this sort of like dabbling interest, but then I'm very much so the age old story of like girl has a baby, girl thinks her baby is the cutest thing on the planet and has to like document every moment of their life. So after we took our son for his newborn photos, I like looked at this setup that this girl had. She literally was doing the photos like out of her like cute little house. And I was like, I could do this. And so I convinced my then husband that if we like bought a nice camera, it was Costco. Like I went to Costco and picked out my very first like really nice camera. And I can, it was like $1,000 or something, $1,200. So it was expensive, but I remember like really telling him like, hey, if you do this, like I'll learn how to use this and we'll never have to pay another photographer again for like photos of our son. Right. I'm divorced now. So I like to make a little like, I don't know, snarky joke that like, it's the only promise I ever kept in my marriage. That's not true. It's not true. But it's just a fun little divorce joke for sure that I actually ended up keeping that promise. I learned how to use my camera. I practiced for years and years and years, and then finally started, not years and years and years. I'm not that old, but, I know I had my son in 2007 and I shot my very first wedding in 2010, but, I didn't really shoot like a full year of weddings and be like really dedicated to it until 2012, 2013-ish. Cause I had two more babies along the way during that whole process. So, that's not that interesting of a story. Like I basically had a baby and thought he was the best thing on the planet and they needed to document him. And so I learned how to use like a nice camera, but then like the photography bug just sort of like bit me really hard. Cause I was doing photos of my kids and then my friends would see them. Of course, like that's how that always snowballs. It's like you have a hobby that you're good at and then people want to like pay you to do it, right? But I learned very quickly that I was not so interested in running a portrait photography business and that I wanted to be doing weddings. So I made that leap. And luckily, like whenever I was in that stage of my life, I was working as a school psychologist. I had three young babies. I had three boys under the age of 4 and a half. I really built the business as like a boutique business right from the jump. It wasn't ever, like my main source of income. So it was always just this supplemental thing that I was doing. And so I really was able to start building it and being able to say no to weddings that I wasn't even wanting to shoot, which I had no freaking business. I had no business saying no to anything because I wasn't even an established photographer. But I don't know, I really sort of like niched myself down into this space of wanting to be a boutique photographer, wanting to pick and choose the work that I could. And so luckily I had the luxury of doing that in the first beginning years. And that just sort of like kept going. And I very easily stepped into like a luxury wedding space. So.
Wow. So that's
the Cliff Notes version for
that's
sure.
That's the Cliff Notes. But it's really interesting because you have your degree in psychology. So how much does psychology play into your photography business?
Psychology, literally, I can't even explain how much I use my degree every single day within my business, especially with like the psychology of consumerism and how people buy, how I market my work, how I go about even running my social media channels, how I use it during emails, during bookings, how it's used. I don't have a ton of like conflict in my business because of the fact that I'm very good at like proactively handling any sort of issue that may come up with my clients. But the conflict resolution side of psychology and really understanding people, really understanding their emotions, their feelings, their behaviors that manifest from those emotions, it's like, it's paramount. I can't even begin to like say how much that weighs a factor in like me building my business.
Yeah. Let's talk about that, because I mean, I know just within the marketing aspects and stuff that I teach, it's all psychology. I mean, marketing is all psychology. So what kinds of advice like would you give for somebody that is just starting out within the wedding industry or any business really for that matter? Like where do you think they should start with their marketing?
I think the very, very, very first place that people have to start in any sort of marketing in this day and age, because social media is what it is, you have to start with the idea that people buy based on having an emotional connection. Like, yeah. I think that people sort of underestimate how powerful that is, because you think that you go to Target and you sort of roam the aisles and you just like pick out the things that you like need to have for your house or whatever, but that is so not true. Like Target itself knows that whenever you walk into Target, it's an experience, right? The feelings that you get as you're walking through Target, as you see everything sort of like cohesively lined on the aisles, and you know the whole layout of the store, and you feel like you could stay in there for hours, and they put a Starbucks in there for a reason. And like, it just, even if you're picking out towels, like you think you might just be picking out these because they're cheap or these or whatever, but 100%, like there's so many emotions tied into every single purchase that we make. Like you're probably picking out the towels that you're used to having in your childhood home, because that's what feels good. That's what feels like a connection to you, right? Like I just did a training on this earlier today, and I drink Diet Pepsi because my grandmother had Diet Pepsi in her pantry whenever I was growing up. And I never, it's not so much that I don't like the taste of Coke, because I kind of do, but even the smell of Diet Pepsi brings me back to a place of like feeling at home. Right.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how powerful that emotional buy-in is. And it's really, really, really a huge part of how I run my social media, that I allow people into my life a little bit, that I allow them to see me as a mom. I allow them to see me as a fiance. I allowed them to see me as a divorcee. I allowed them to watch sort of like that rebuilding process of my life, and people being able to watch like the behind the scenes. I also went into this huge other, this is such a massive topic that I
totally
talk about.
Yes. Days,
because in the training that I did this morning too, I went into this whole like different like sidebar of the psychology of reality TV, and that stories are basically like, little mini commercials for your business, right? They're little like mini episodes of your own reality TV. If you're running them correctly, you can really harness that power of curiosity. Like curiosity is one of the strongest human desires that we have. That's just, it's such a biological predisposition. Like it's innate. We can't stop ourselves from being curious beings. And so that idea of being like a fly on the wall in somebody's home, that's what completely like, I don't know, is the powerhouse behind reality TV, and why it's so addicting, and why it's such like this huge phenomenon in our country. And what stories do is literally take that into little mini bite-sized pieces. So whenever you're letting your clients in to see a little bit of your world that you actually live, even if you think that you run the most boring life that there is, people find it captivating to watch other humans and see how they live. So using all of those social media channels that we have available now in order to get that emotional buy-in is the most powerful tool that any small business owner has. If you think about it, like back in the day, remember whenever we had like, the yellow pages?
Yes.
Like imagine if you had the yellow pages and you had to like open a page to like find a photographer, right?
Yes.
And everything was all about like how big of an ad you bought in the yellow pages, right? Like that's how people used to have to market themselves, which is bizarre to me, because I mean, we obviously run businesses that are in this like social media sort of space. So showing your personality, showing like your worldviews, showing your integrity and all of that, it really, I could go on for days about this, like also going into like the halo effect and like all this stuff, but it's everything, really.
It's so funny that you mentioned stories, because that's a big thing. I know in one of our programs, in one of our Instagram program that we talk a lot about, and I educate the important stories, like keeping that bubble lit all the time, but using it in a strategy, using it in a way that's actually going to connect and convert. And it's people either, I feel like most people, they're either like, they know they're on stories, they feel comfortable with stories, or they don't feel comfortable at all. They're so terrified of showing up on stories. They don't want to put themselves out there. What kind of advice would you give to somebody who knows they need to be on stories, right? But is just so afraid of showing up. And I'm glad that you're talking about this, because my clients hear me preach about this 24/7. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You have to show up to connect with them. Like you have to, they have to see your personality. They have to feel you. And so I'm glad that there's somebody else now like saying the same thing, but yeah. how do you coach and you are also a course creator, and we're going to get into that in a little bit, but how would you coach someone who's just having a really hard time showing up as their authentic self in stories?
Okay. Well, honestly, I genuinely think that getting in front of a video is hard. It's really hard. And whenever I was first starting to do it, I showed up slowly, and then I worked myself into it and really got myself to a place where like it became more natural for me. I think that especially for women, we have this huge, like this imposter syndrome that sort of sets in. Imposter syndrome is, you know, I think that you probably know what it is, and I probably don't have to define it, but it's a relatively new term in regards to like psychology, and that there's not a ton of research behind it yet, but I do know that it mainly affects women, right? Because as women are sort of slowly stepping into a space of putting ourselves out there more, running businesses more, being more successful in the business world, it's this, you know, this sort of like self-doubt that creeps in. And I have this huge like thought that's sort of like swirling in my head right now that I need to like sort of dive into a little bit more for myself. But it drives me a little bit crazy that the term imposter syndrome and the whole entire phenomenon was actually created by women. Like it was actually like defined by women. And so it almost has this feeling of like woman on woman crime to me. Like that it's like I don't know, this idea that we as women are feeling these feelings, but then instead of like working through those feelings and getting ourselves to a place of like this confidence level, instead we'll put ourselves into a box and say like, oh, okay, well, here's the definition of it. Here's why I'm feeling this way. And then we'll define it, which then sort of like paralyzes us a little bit more, because then we give ourselves, oh, well, I have imposter syndrome, or, oh, well, I'm struggling with this, or, oh, I'm in Enneagram 6.
You're feeding it more power.
Yeah. You feed that self-doubt the more you give a definition to it, right? Like,
or I'm a perfectionist. Whenever
you get the flu, right? If you get your ass out of bed, can I say ass? I'm sorry.
Yes.
Up out of bed and you're moving around during the day. I mean, maybe not with a flu, maybe with a cold, but like if you get up and you go about your day and you're doing all the things that you need to do, then like you just still like you get through it faster, right? You get yourself to the other side of it. And if you lay in bed and if you tell yourself that you feel so awful and you tell yourself that like, oh, I have a cold, I can't do anything, it makes it bigger in your life. It makes it like this huge thing that's keeping you from being able to do your daily tasks, right? And that's probably a really bad example, because if you're sick, please lay in bed and take care of yourself. but yeah, like it's this like self-fulfilling prophecy that if you tell yourself that you're one thing, then you're going to become that one thing. Yeah. So like, if you can take all of those insecurities that you have about being on camera, if you can take all of it and sort of just, you know, reframe it in your brain, because I'm this cocky sort of like very like oddly confident, aggressive, competitive person by nature. Right. And so I was a collegiate athlete. So it fed it, like it worked well for me in one part of my life. But, I just do this trick in my head whenever I start to feel some sort of imposter syndrome creeping in or any sort of like self-doubt or negative talk. I like to change it to be like, all right, well, hell, like challenge accepted. You know, let me flip the script. Let me change this narrative. Because if my, we have this, I talk in tangents. Have you noticed? There's a negativity bias that like goes on in our brains at all times. We actually, as human beings, think more about the negative things that are going on in our lives, and we give more power to it just naturally, right? And there's also a positivity bias. The positivity bias tells us that the things that happen that are good, they only happened by chance, or that they're only going to be here for a little bit. And so we almost like negative talk ourselves out of the positivity bias, if that makes sense.
No, it totally makes sense. It's mindset. It's all mindset. So,
It is. And part of it is human nature, but the more you feed it, the more you give to it, the bigger it's going to get. And the more you starve it and tell it like, no, hell no. Like I'm a bad bitch and I can like get this shit done. Sorry. I asked you if I could say ass. And now
you can. No, you can. Go ahead.
But being in front of a camera is hard. So I do have that sort of like empathetic side. But as with anything in business, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it, right?
Yep.
So take baby steps, tell yourself that you have to be on your stories, you know, once a week, and then move it to 3 times a week, and then move it, maybe, I don't know, just keep moving it to a place where you feel like, I pick up my camera now and I'll be makeupless and I will be with a top knot on my head and I don't care what I look like. And I will talk about every single flaw that I have and like every single win that I have too, because it's so natural for me now because I've been doing it for years. I think that you could also probably start like piggybacking it a little bit. Like, in the training that I did, I said, like, if you don't love to be on camera, you have to find some other way to get people to have this emotional buy-in with you. And even if that has to be, you know, a newsletter that you're sending out to your clients or that you're like keeping a blog series up or something like that, maybe tie that in, piggyback it into, okay, well, I've written this blog and this is what I'm really good at. I'm really good in the written form and I want to showcase this, but I have to challenge myself to give like a 30-second intro to it on my Instagram stories.
Like, love that tip.
Yeah. Like piggybacking it onto like the place where you do feel that you have a strength, it will probably make talking about something a little bit easier. And then, like I said, the more you do that, the more you'll start to feel comfortable being in front of the camera too.
I love that. That's such a beautiful way of positioning it too.
Thank you. Thank you. I feel like whenever I talk, like I just get these little tangents of like squirrel, like I'm thinking, and I'm like, oh, and then this could happen. Oh, and then this could happen. And then, so I'm sorry if I go off into like,
no, it's okay. I want to talk about, cause I know a lot of, not necessarily photographers struggle with this, but I think people that are new to business as a whole or going into the wedding industry, or even if they're already been in the wedding industry, is price. I want to talk about price. The big word price, because your prices are luxury high end prices. Can I ask you what your rates start at? What your base photography rate start at?
Okay. My base photography rate just to go out and shoot like a very like stringent 8-hour wedding start to finish is $9,000. But most of my clients usually spend, they usually do my collection that's 11, I think it's 11,500 is that collection. And they do quite a few add-ons. And so usually I'm making anywhere between like 10 to 15,000 for a wedding.
And I know there are some photographers right now that are saying, holy cow, what am I doing wrong?
I don't think that they're doing anything wrong per se, but this is such a huge topic again. And I think that everybody wants to have this like easy button, right? Mm-hmm. You just want to be like, oh, you want to move into the luxury wedding space? Like, here's the answer. Push this button. Now you're in the luxury wedding space. And it just doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. I've told other photographers before that, like, if you haven't been in the industry for at least like 10 to 12 years, don't expect to be in the luxury wedding space. Like, I'm sure there are probably going to be, you know, these one-off sort of amazing, phenomenal photographers who have just such a great skill and such a great eye that they could sort of like part the sea of photographers and be shooting in that space without having to really market themselves at all. But I think that's very slim chances. I am not that person at all. I do think that my work is really beautiful. I love what I do, but it has taken me, 12 years now? 12 years of building this business in order. And I just raised my prices too, because last year you could get me at 8,000 or 7,000 maybe. Anyways, I just raised my prices to where like I'm moving in towards having at least five figures for every wedding. But it took me such a long time to get there. Even with my work being very pretty, like it's not about how great your work is. It's about how well you market yourself. It's about the connections that you make. It's about the networking that you do. It's about that emotional buy-in. It's literally about building a base of an audience who will literally like shout your name from the rooftops. It's got a little bit of like a cult like following sort of feel to it, but that's the place that you have to get into to where, you know, planners and florists and other people in the industry want to work with you, and they know who you are and you've made that networking connection and they know you as an individual. It's pricing is just a beast of a conversation.
I know. So for someone that is, let's say, and it's so funny, you and I are just such on the same page with everything about marketing. And I always say my thing and what I drives me crazy in our industry is people start out, and I think it's really good to start out with price and say, okay, let me kind of evaluate the market. Let me look at the market. Like, what is my experience? I mean, I do think that those things all come into play, but I think the missing beat, and I see a lot of people teaching how to figure out your price and how to know like your expenses, and you calculate, take your expenses versus based on your price point. And I think all that is really, really important. But I think what we're missing in the educational aspect of our industry is you can raise your pricing. You can decide on what you need to make in order to, let's say, I always start with the $100,000 mark, because it's like, okay, $100,000 mark in your business minus expenses, minus taxes brings you to like roughly around between a $6,000 a month income, which is a decent base, but it's no chump change. But people are so, they don't look at the whole entire picture. They look at, okay, I just need to make like, they're living from bride to bride, hustle, hustle from bride to bride, and not really looking at the entire picture. And so I always say, pick your price, start with that you're going to make $100,000 a year, pick your price point, and then create your marketing around the prices that you want to obtain. What is your take on that?
Well, I think that I don't know, from a numbers perspective, if I want to make $100,000 in my business, if I actually want $100,000 to be in my bank account,
then it needs to be higher. My
business has to actually probably make about 200 to maybe 180, you know?
Right.
So I think that that's the biggest scary bubble that like people have yet, whenever you're first starting out, you haven't popped that bubble yet.
You haven't really popped. No.
Like you might think like, okay, cool. I'm going to book this wedding as a photographer and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to book it for $3,000. I started booking weddings at $3,000 and I was like, woo, look at me. Like, but if you, like you said, if you actually if you actually look at how many weddings I would have to shoot at $3,000 for the whole entire year to make $180,000 so that I actually had $100,000 take home, then like I would be working every day of my life. Like I think that that's a huge misconception too in the wedding industry, and why the wedding industry is as expensive as it is because people who aren't in my industry are like, oh my God, you're making like $10,000 a wedding to $15,000 a wedding. They're like, you must be rolling. And I'm like, well, I mean, I make good money, but like running a business solely off of shooting weddings for me, just like it wouldn't cut it. I mean, I'm a single mom of three boys and I have to like manage all of that. Like,
yeah.
I just couldn't do it. I have to have other streams of income happening too.
Yeah. And you do, you have your course.
I do. I didn't for a long time. I didn't. And now like, that's just such a huge part of diversifying and, having these other streams of income coming in. And, I have a print shop also that like runs for a stream of income too. And then of course, like I have the course, but I also do, you know, mentoring and things like that on the side also. But I think that the biggest thing that, I don't know, pricing is just, it's so personal, and like having to sort of say what it is that you want to actually make on a financial sense, but then also sort of like, you know, balancing that with, but also like, how happy do I want to be? How much do I want to work? How much do I want to spend time with my kids instead of being at weddings every single weekend? And like, I don't think that the price point is as important as looking at what is my time actually worth? Because I think that's the reason why I'm in the space of being a luxury wedding photographer. I have the talent to be there, but I also have the mindset of how much my time is worth to me. As a single mom, having three boys at home all the time, I don't want to be gone. I don't want to leave my house to have to go shoot a $3,000 wedding. I don't want to be leaving my kids in order to make $3,000 is what I mean by that. Cause $3,000 weddings are beautiful and like amazing. Sure. But I don't want, my time is more valuable to me than that. I don't want to leave my children for less than $10,000.
So it's more of a life by design.
Yeah. It's such a big picture. I keep on saying that, but it's about the networking. It's about making sure that you have that business sort of built underneath you. But then it's also about having the confidence to move into that space. And that takes us full circle all the way back to all of that imposter syndrome and all that self-doubt and getting yourself out of that headspace. And so like, honestly, I think the one thing that I would say about pricing is it's more of a lesson in therapy than it is in what you count. Right?
I love that.
Like your pricing is directly tied to what you view your like self-worth at. And your self-worth is only as great as your mental health and what it is that you're doing to keep yourself in that sort of like space. So yeah, I think it's such a personal thing, the same way that like what you go and talk to your therapist about is personal.
That's wow. That was beautiful.
I think it takes me a while to like get to the point.
To get to the, yeah. I'm the same way. I'm like, I start here and then I go over here and then I go around. But yeah, it's, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head with it's how you value your self-worth and your time. And yeah. I love this.
That's why it takes me, I think that's why I like talk in circles around it, because it's such a big like idea. It's such a big spectrum of like things, little avenues that you go down to talk about it. You know, from the psychology side, I just know that emotions are everything. And that's where my brain always goes. It's like, if I want to be in the luxury like market, then I have to have relationships with people who are in the luxury market.
Beautiful. And yeah. So you started transitioning and you created a course. You're now in the coaching space,
yeah.
Which is kind of how we connected. And, and so tell us about your, tell us about your program, the JN Effect.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no, let's take it back once.
Okay.
Obviously we know now why you wanted to create a course and get into different revenue streams, but tell us what that process was like for you transitioning into the online coaching space.
Okay.
Because I know there's a lot of people on here in a lot of people listening that are seeing what's happening to the coaching industry. They're seeing, you know, opportunities for passive income, and they're curious as to what it's like.
Okay. I had really felt the pull to be moving my business for several years before I actually like made the jump to do it. I knew that I was approaching the time to start like going into more of a teaching space. Just because I had been in the industry, I knew that I was an expert. I knew that I had something to say, but the problem was that my business was busy. And like, I'm a single mom of three boys. I have almost 90% custody of them. So they're always home. And moving into having just the time to create a machine like that. Like, I don't know if people know this, but in order to create a course, it is a whole business that you have to build. It is a whole machine. It is a beast amount of work.
It's a lot of work. We were talking about this before we started recording. And
yeah, it is so much work. And so finding the time to do that whenever I was already running a very successful wedding photography business was difficult for me. And then COVID happened. And then, you know, the shutdown happened, the pandemic hit. And for the first time in building the business for 10 years, I actually had time. And I feel a little bit guilty whenever I talk about this, that COVID gave me the time that I needed in order to change the trajectory of where my business was going, because that feels a little guilty for me that it took people dying, that it took our world shutting down, that it took like everybody having to suffer as hard as they did. But I've talked to other mom friends and stuff about this too, is that like there was gifts that were sort of like wrapped up by the pandemic that gave us all this like time with our friends, or not our friends, but time with our family, time with our kids, time to sort of like hit the pause button and really take a look at what your life, I feel like we're all like barreling down these highways, and COVID made us all sort of stop and say like, is this really what I want to be doing? Right. And I know that wedding photography is what I want to be doing. I'm not ready to take a step out of that yet, but I do, with my kids getting older and them having activities and like baseball tournaments and stuff across the weekends, I do want to be shooting less. And so whenever COVID hit, I knew that it was like, okay, like this is the time that I need in order to like change everything. So within the year that we were home and that the world sort of stopped, I built the print shop and I built the online course. So
what a beautiful blessing.
I feel like it's a guilty blessing, but, I got to hang out a ton with my kids and I got to completely change my business. So I forget what the original question was. Did I answer it?
Yeah, you did. You did. you did. No worries. I do that all the time too. So tell us about the JN effect. Tell us what it is.
Okay. So the JN effect is literally like, I get like sort of giddy whenever I talk about it because I believe in it so much. I don't ever pose my clients, and people would ask me all the time, like how it is that my images look so effortless and so comfortable and so timeless and classic. But at the same time, I would tell them I don't pose them. And they're like, okay, well, how, like, how do you do that? And, so I built the course based completely around this like groundbreaking system that I use on my shoots, that I teach my clients how to actually sort of like sync their brains together. And I use their shared experiences and their memories and their stories that they already share. I use the chemistry that's already built into my clients. And I create an experience around that to where they almost sort of like forget that there's a photographer there. So the JN effect goes into teaching that system and talking about every single like psychological element that's coming into play, both on my side of the camera and on the client side of the camera, and how all of those elements create the, sort of the culture around the shoot. If that makes sense. If you have like an office culture, then I guess you have like a shoot culture at the same time. How all of those emotions, all of those feelings really sort of like take over the shoot. And me as a master of human behavior, I'm able to very easily sort of like help my clients move into a space to where they're not posing with each other and they're just being with each other.
That's beautiful. It's brilliant, actually. I caught a glimpse, I think, of a couple of your emails that went out. And I was like, oh, that's what it is. Wow. I mean, that's basically, I think I read something in one of your emails, something like, you just like have whisper in his ear or something. There was like whisper in his ear. It was in one of your emails. And
yeah, I might say that sometimes.
I can't remember what it was, but I was like, oh, that's how she captures such amazing photographs.
I don't think that I have one that's a whisper in the ear. So I don't know. I'll have to look back through my emails because I don't like, it's not triggering in my head of like what it is. It's hard for me to explain exactly what I do, because if I explain exactly what I do, then it like tells you what's in the course.
Totally. Right? Totally. Yeah. It's brilliant, you guys. If you're a photographer, you need to get her course.
Yeah.
Because if you have not seen Jodi's work, like, you're missing out. You do boudoir also, don't you?
Oh my God, babe. Oh,
I know. I need,
if I could teach boudoir, like, I've actually thought about this for so long of like how I could actually do a course or how I could teach what I do in boudoir. But it's impossible because there's naked women, and I would never ask a woman to be naked for hundreds of people to see, thousands of people to see, whoever was buying the course. I would feel very uncomfortable with that. And also what goes on during a boudoir shoot with me is, this is going to sound dirty, but I don't mean it in a dirty way, but it's really, really, really intimate. And, I don't know that that would ever be something that I could actually teach, but boudoir, I have three boudoir shoots coming up. Like, in, I have one tomorrow and then two more next week. And I love, like, I would choose to shoot boudoir for the rest of my life. And I would give up weddings if anybody ever like, you know, forced me to do it. It's like, oh, we're going to steal your oldest kid, or you have to choose between weddings and boudoir. I might let them steal my kid. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But, I would choose boudoir. I love it that much. Yeah.
So what is on as we close, what is on the horizon next for you? So what is, we're coming up on fall wedding season. What's going on for fall and when are you relaunching the JN Effect?
Well, the JN Effect is actually open right now, like as we're recording this. So I don't know when this is coming out. It'll probably be closed by then. But so it's open right now because of the fact that I added modules for family photos for portrait photographers. I do a very, not a small set. I have about 30 clients that I'll do family photos for every year. And I actually just taught a whole like training about like how I launch them and how I'll make like $30,000 in one day by like, I launch my family photo shoots is almost more like they're an auction rather than booking them with my clients. That's a whole different like training, a whole different conversation. But so that's why it's out right now is because we're going into the fall season, but it's going to get like wrapped back into the vault at probably until next February, maybe next March before the spring wedding season hits, before engagement, okay. Like photos start really being, like engagement season is usually like Christmas, New Year's, Valentine's Day, right? But yes. Then the engagement sessions don't start happening until like the spring and summertime. So, so it'll probably open back up again next spring. But what I'm doing, this is the beast part that I talk about whenever I say that, like, this is a machine. The next thing that I'm doing is I'm shooting, a course where I'm going to actually let a videographer come and just live shoot me, like live video, me shooting a wedding from start to finish. So wow. Yeah, I think that one's going to be like crazy major. I just can't even like put into words how much content is going to be in that course. So that's probably going to be like my big like signature course. But the whole entire plan is that I want to come out with 12 courses in total. And once I've created all of those courses that touch on every single aspect of how my business runs in this like psychologically based world that my brain lives in, then I'd like to change it into a subscription system to where like you book like a 1-year subscription and you get every single course and that like I walk you through that whole entire process. So that's like long-term, that's like 2 years down the road, but coming up next is my 40th birthday. And then And then a big, huge trip to Paris. And then yeah, I'm going to record that the wedding course and then I'm going to get married next summer. So that's what's
coming up. Oh my God. I love it. But in the meantime, if people want to get in touch with you or get on a wait list or whatever, where should they go?
100% in my bio on my Instagram is my like, you know, my links, sort of the link to all my links, right? It's not a link tree, but because it's much prettier than a link tree would be. but same idea. So like if you went to that bio that's in my on my Instagram, which my Instagram is j.anne photography, then that's gonna give you everything in order to get onto my newsletter list. And that's the place where you would know when the JN Effect is opening again.
I love it. I love it. Oh my gosh. So many exciting, amazing things. I can't thank you enough coming on here and sharing your amazing knowledge. I have always been a fan of psychology and it was so weird how we connected. It was just like, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, people in the wedding industry, yeah. I think when you're in the market, but I don't know. I think you said something and I reached out to you and then we started talking about psychology and then courses.
There's this like natural, for me at least, there's this gravitational pull towards women in business who are in a different sort of headspace to where they're really wanting to like up level and they're really wanting to build little tiny empires, right? I'm gravitated towards that. So like whenever I saw you like doing course stuff and I knew that I was stepping into that space too, I was like, okay, like let me talk to her because there's not a lot of us here in this
whole space. There's not yet. Yeah. Yet. Hopefully we can be the trailblazers.
We already are, babe.
We already are the trailblazers. Everybody's just got to get on board.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. This was awesome.
Thank you so much. And for those of you that are listening, we will put Jodi's links in the show notes. And we
will see. Get at me, guys. Get at me.
Yes. Get at her. She's amazing. Especially if you are a photographer listening to this, you need to like go follow her yesterday. Yes. So much to learn from her page, from her Instagram stories. Yes. And yeah. And thank you so much for watching. We will see you in the next episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you enjoyed listening, please leave us some love and review us below. We would be so grateful. And if you're looking to boss up and grow your business, head over to my website at www.briannamichellecoaching.com for more information on how you can work with me.